Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
Kevin O'Leary didn't really account for the backlash. I think that's fair to say. O'Leary, of course, is the Canadian multimillionaire and reality TV star who's behind the huge data center project in Box Elder County. And when he first started talking about it, his pitch was pretty straightforward. He said it would bring thousands of jobs and a massive new tax base. And beyond that, he said it would put Utah on the front line in the global competition with China over AI supremacy. But then the word got out about the project, and the response was intense. Now, part of this is about resources, like how much water will this thing take. But then there's the scale of it. Just the sheer size of the project was alarming people, the amount of power it would require. And then there's just the broader unease with what these AI systems are becoming. But O'Leary is just making the same case as other tech leaders and state officials that artificial intelligence needs more data centers, not fewer, and bigger data centers. AI needs computing power. He's saying this is inevitable. So O'Leary has spent the last few weeks defending his project in the public, which is why he went on Tucker Carlson's podcast last week. This week, we talked with the journalist Art Raymond about that. He's covering the data center story for the Deseret News.
I was probably as surprised as many people were that O'Leary would even take the interview.
Kevin O'Leary, thank you so much for doing this.
But he did it.
How did you?
And Carlson went right at him.
If you're that concerned about the Chinese, what percentage of the materials in the data center come from China?
It becomes combative pretty quickly.
I'm asking questions that I think are relevant to the country. I'm not an agent of the Chinese. I'm not a socialist. So I just want to know, like, where's the water coming from?
It does make you wonder why it is that Kevin O'Leary agreed to do it in the first place. I mean, surely he knew Carlson has been skeptical and critical of AI. I mean, must have seen Carlson's infamous interview with OpenAI founder Sam Altman.
For sure.
Went after him. And O'Leary decides to walk into the buzzsaw anyway. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, my take was this happened in the midst of what I would guess is a very intentional series of national media interviews. And certainly there's got to be a recognition in his tactic, let's say, to do all this national media to create space for himself to respond to what he's run into.
Yeah. Seems like Carlson's most critical question was, why should taxpayers pay for a multimillionaire's data center project?
They don't. But
well, of course they do. If you're getting a tax break and they're not, they're making up the difference. There's a state budget.
Okay, that's no problem. No problem. I can build it in Texas. I can build it in Jacksonville, Mississippi.
Why, if it's such a good business, would you be asking taxpayers to help pay for it without giving them equity in the company? Are you giving taxpayers shares?
That question is on the minds of many Utah residents, but it's specifically important question for this project because this project becomes a public discussion because of passage of what is, I think, fair to describe as a massive tax subsidy package. This is the only way that O'Leary's project can be competitive, is if he obtains this kind of support in the form of tax relief from the state, and in this case, a local government entity like Box Elder County.
It's interesting that moment where Tucker says, you know, if you want to find out what they think, voters, put it to a vote. Ask them. And O'Leary's response is, well, I did.
3-0. The commissioners of the county said, we want to be part of this.
Three people voted. The people of the county.
They're elected officials. That's how you do it.
How hard is it for Kevin O'Leary and Amazon and Microsoft and Google to subvert three county commissioners in rural Utah?
Pretty tough. They asked us to come.
Yeah, it's a fascinating take. My interpretation of that is O'Leary sees elected officials as essentially functioning as strawmen for the public. Well, that is certainly the case if these votes on regulatory relief, regulatory change, or subsidies, if that reflects the constituency, but I think it's premature to make that argument. We can easily compare current public sentiment with the decisions by elected officials so far.
One of the things Tucker Carlson said in his conversation with O'Leary is that, as he put it, there are probably non-crazy people who live in Utah who are – this is a typical way of putting it for Tucker Carlson.
Yes, it is.
Non-crazy people who live in Utah are asking, why is this good for me?
It's fair. It's fair. All this is fair. How about we forget the data center and just talk about the power for a second? Because there aren't going to be any data centers in America unless we build power generation. Do you have the same visceral reaction to power generation as you do to data centers?
Inversely.
Any development of this scale comes with a footprint. In this case, this footprint is very specific to a couple of very important issues in Utah: water use, air quality. So I think it's appropriate for residents, for voters, for taxpayers to have enough information to come to a decision on their own about whether this is worth it or not.
Kevin O'Leary, I sure appreciate it, and I hope that when my personal data comes through your data center, you will filter it.
Tucker, I think
one of the takeaways for me certainly was that obviously Tucker Carlson has an audience, and he has for many years. I think one of the remarkable things about the sort of outflow from that interview with O'Leary is that it resonated with an audience far beyond, let's say, a regular Carlson listener, because it goes to the set of concerns that are showing themselves to be nonpartisan or aside from partisanship. While that partisanship that we're all seeing and feeling in our lives still exists, but these sets of concerns are showing themselves to be bigger than that, or at least aside from that. And I believe that the way the Carlson O'Leary interview resonated reflects that.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about this collision course between what seems to be the inevitable AI build-out and the growing public resistance. So let's go back to our conversation with Art Raymond of the Deseret News. Raymond has been looking at Kevin O'Leary's other data center project in Alberta, Canada, and kind of comparing the two.
It's worth noting that the projects are very similar from a structural sense. The Utah proposal has access to a regional gas pipeline. The Alberta, Canada potential project site is on top of a massive natural gas reserve, one of the biggest in the world. So, and the power generation source for that project would be primarily natural gas, as we've heard so far about the Utah project. Yeah. It's run into the similar level of concern from residents. There's also concerns that have been shared by government officials from First Nations, yeah, which is that project is proximate to tribal lands in Alberta. And they've also been seemingly enjoying some similar levels of support from government entities. They received a waiver on an environmental impact study, which was justified with a follow-up about, well, there's going to be all of these incremental permit-level assessments done. That's very similar to what we're hearing right now. Mm-hmm. From the developers and from some government officials in Utah. It's like, oh, there'll be all these check-ins.
So let's just get it going.
Right. It's a way of pushing back on demands for impact studies, yeah, for instance. Right. Well, we're gonna check that. It's also telling, I believe, that even though the Alberta project, you know, it is ahead of the Utah, but, you know, I believe the announcement came in December of 2024. At this point, they were pledging that construction will have already started by now, 2026, and be operational in 27. At this point, this project's already essentially two years behind that now. Why? Projected construction will not be happening until 2028.
Why? Public opposition? Was that?
I think it's more a it's hard to know if this is a reflection of the regulatory process, yeah, or if there is a slowdown mechanism being kind of put in play. I also believe we can see a slowdown effort taking place right here in just the language that's being used to describe the project. When this came out of the gate, which really the MIDA hearing, I think, is what put this on the collective radar, the Utah project was being described, 40,000 acres, 7.5 to 9 gigawatts. That's been portrayed variably, but 9 gigawatts potentially as an ultimate build out, et cetera, et cetera. Full scale, that was the language being used. Now, all of a sudden, we're talking about, and the governor's comments have reflected this as well. Oh, well, this is, we're just doing 2,000 acres. It's going to be a 1.5 gigs.
Yeah.
This changed water rights application now, which 1,900 acre feet. Now there's a new, that which we know has been rescinded, is now there's a new water right transfer application for 11 acre feet. This project from the beginning, and the Alberta one as well, they're phased projects. You can only build a portion of these at a time. We can see what's happened with the Meta project, and Facebook's a great use case for that. Because you start with one building, now there's 5 or 6 buildings out there. And they're getting bigger.
And by out there, you mean here in Utah?
Yeah, in Eagle Mountain.
In Eagle Mountain, yeah.
So these projects are phased. They're incremental by nature. But the language being used to discuss them now has been scaled down, I'd say. Now we're talking about a 2,000-acre data center, 1.5 megawatts, this 11-acre feet application for an 11-acre feet water rights transfer. To me, that shows a change in description of this project, but really hasn't changed the underlying structure of these, which is they are phased, they are incremental, and I've yet to hear any change of scale. And that's true of both Alberta and the Box Elder County project.
But what seems to be happening is that these developers and leaders who are helping facilitate these projects are seeing opposition to the scale, that people are freaked out about the size of these things and the power that they'll use. Because that seems to be the turning point in this, because we have in Utah 48 data centers.
And counting. Right.
In your reporting, you've mentioned this, but this is – the Box Elder project is such a scale that it's drawing attention. That seems to be the thing that is building this momentum of public opposition. Do you think that's right?
Oh, I think it's absolutely on point. I mean, how many 40,000 acre analogies have we heard since the Manhattan ones?
Exactly.
Mostly been used inaccurately as far as I can tell, but
they're massive.
But
you get the point.
It's 62 square miles.
Yeah.
It's a giant footprint. It should be noted, clearly that this doesn't mean it's built out edge to edge. This is a plot upon which, but certainly these are huge scales. Data center projects have amped up markedly. University of Utah's Kim Gardner Policy Institute hosted a conversation about data centers about a month or so ago. They brought in a guy named Sean Hyatt. He's a professor at University of Southern California, energy expert. He talked about these, the current wave of data center buildouts, the so-called hyperscalers, which is really a description of who the clients are going to be, but it's been used now to describe the scale of these. They're 4 and 5 times bigger than the previous.
They're just getting bigger and bigger.
Bigger and bigger. And that is a reflection of the kind of processing consumption required by AI software development.
Well,
plain and simple.
Yeah, and you mentioned in your reporting from that Ken Gardner Policy Institute gathering that the average capacity for these facilities has quadrupled over the last decade. And then just in terms of how many of them across the United States, you say some 400 of these hyperscale data centers are under construction. That's adding to the already 3,000 that are in operation. Put that in perspective for us.
Well, it's sort of riffing off of Professor Hyatt's data point. They're proliferating in terms of numbers, but they are also 4 or 5 times bigger than the previous build out. Yeah. So we can, again, we have this handy use case. Go look at Eagle Mountain, look at Meta's build out there, and then times it by 4. And actually, I think that multiplicative process doesn't even get us to what we've been told is going to be the scale of O'Leary's Box Elder County project.
Art Raymond, He's a business reporter for the Deseret News. He covers industry and technology. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're spending more time on the data center proposed for Box Elder County that's caused such an uproar. But it's not just here, of course. Across the country, communities are pushing back against these projects. But compare that with the need for AI infrastructure, which is also accelerating. So you have these two forces moving directly toward each other. So we're talking about what happens when those two things collide. As resistance grows, is there any real sign the AI build-out is actually slowing down? We have with us Art Raymond of the Deseret News. Let's talk a little bit about one of the things you center on in your latest reporting, and that is the fact that opposition to these kinds of data center projects has exploded over the last year. There's this tracking site that you mentioned that sort of has been keeping track of opposition. It's the U.S. Data Center Moratorium Tracker, and it looks around at different bans and moratoriums that are playing out. And here's the sort of salient detail that you write about. You say, if we were to go back to just 1 year, May of 2025, and Art, this is from your article, there were just 8 of these moratoriums or efforts to ban or enact these moratoriums for these data centers in different places in the country. Just 8. Now you fast forward to a year. Fast forward to last month, April. And now there are 78 of these. And I was just doing a sort of back of the envelope calculation. That's nearly tenfold. That's 875% increase in these things. Talk about that. That does qualify as an explosion.
Yeah, it definitely does. And that number reflects successful efforts to ban or slow down these, and most of which are happening at a municipal level. But truly, I think if we maybe, you know, dot plotted the explosion in efforts to get massive data center developments off the ground and dot plotted this trajectory of public pushback and legislative efforts, I'm guessing we're going to see tracking along those same lines. As these projects increase in both number and scale footprint, I believe we are still just seeing the very first steps in an even broader public resistance to these projects. It's definitely worth noting that so far the efforts to successfully enact bans and moratoriums, again, are happening at local jurisdiction level. So we have yet to see a statewide ban or moratorium. However, there are quite a few in play. And just even very recently, the state of Maine, their state lawmakers supported a time-stipulated ban in the state of Maine. It was right there, ready to go, but was vetoed by their governor.
Yeah. And part of that was also trying to limit the size of the data centers that would be allowed in the state.
There are a lot of variations on approach to how to slow down these developments. Some efforts are about removing or limiting the ability of local jurisdictions to issue permits,
as happened in Box Elder County.
Exactly.
Yep.
Some of them are going for very defined moratoriums, in most cases that are intended to create space to assess exactly what you're getting into.
In other words, slow down because we don't know yet what this is going to mean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And recompute and reassess for what is a quite different world of data center development. As you noted, these aren't your, you know, mom and dad's data centers. So it's really trite, but you know what I'm saying? It's in a relatively very short period of time. Meta came to town in the late 2010s. But what is happening now is a quite different approach, quite different scale. It's driven primarily by AI. And those moratoriums, in most cases, are seeking, space and time to assess, you know, but in the language of these proposals, to figure out what's right for a particular community, a particular location, particular state.
It seems like what people are saying is, hang on a minute, because there's such an exponential increase in just the progression of AI. So no one knows exactly what that's going to mean. I mean, take into account jobs and all of the other sort of societal factors that are going to play in. But then, as you said, these data centers to fuel these, you know, AI models are just getting bigger and drawing more power. And so it seems like what people are saying is, before we jump in, let's know what this means for water, for air, all of the implications. They just want to slow down. Seems like that's what's going on.
Yeah, and the language, if you dig into the language of these proposals, that's stipulated frequently. It's not just wait or just stop. It goes to, so we have time to conduct thorough, appropriate, thoughtful impact assessments mm-hmm. of these sites. You know, impact assessments of all these concerns. You know, environmental impacts loom large here in Utah for the reasons we know. But the biggest concern that was tracked, again, by Professor Hyatt's group at USC discovered that the number one issue, you know, coming from residents in these areas of potential data center development kind of just go to quality of more basic quality of life, noise, light, traffic.
Yeah.
And these are the you know, any local government official will tell you that's what it's about. You know, that's where people start caring, you know, about what's going on. Those are those very basic quality of life issues. And that's been triggered yeah. very clearly and on a massive scale.
So by it's not just how much water.
Exactly.
It's not just how much it might dirty the air or make a heat island or whatever. It's how's this going to change our day-to-day
yeah.
life?
And therein lies perhaps the fact that this is bigger than partisanship because these issues go to everybody's basic function. You know, you step into the realm of discussion mm. about environmental issues.
Yeah.
Those are inherently partisan.
Yep.
But these basic life quality issues just hit in a way that, again, you know, is bigger or to the side of politics.
Well, it gets us back to the Tucker Carlson conversation with Kevin O'Leary and how intense that got. Tucker Carlson is not a lefty by any stretch of the imagination.
Indeed.
And so, yeah, I think that is the question. Like, where do the politics line up on this? Because, you know, as you said, you would think, okay, on the right, residents and leaders would encourage development and growth and the possibility of economic opportunity. On the left, they would say, hold on a minute, what are the environmental impacts? But it's not cutting that way, it seems, this story.
It's bigger than that. And again, the full portfolio of things that people are worried about, and it's next to, I believe, some collective uneasiness about artificial intelligence. People know the source, I believe. It's pretty widely recognized what's driving this scale of data center development. It's the ongoing development of AI tools. I think it's fair to say it's an undefined path. It's this hazy future
yeah.
that has like too many sci-fi metaphors to make anybody comfortable about things like singularities
yep.
and
yep.
Skynet. I had to say it. Yeah. But so I think the worries about data center development, they're not happening in a vacuum. People know that these are facilities that are – the rising need and rising scale of them is driven primarily by the AI software industry. And now they are being glued together perhaps in an extra elevated level of concern. Or you're starting to assess the impacts of data centers on your bed of already existing AI anxiety. It seems like there's a double down factor here that is inevitable. It makes sense.
Yeah. Let me ask you finally, Art. The governor has said, look, you're just delaying the inevitable. This is coming. This AI revolution is here. And so why shouldn't we get in on this? So what's the sort of tension, the conflict that you see coming to that argument? Like, what are you paying attention to now?
Well, it's kind of the same thing I always try to keep an eye on, which is follow the money and what are the underlying goals of the people taking positions on these. Certainly, Utah has a reputation, and it's one well-deserved, I believe, as being a state that is very friendly to business. And we have the data to back it up. So there's a predisposition to be ready to, from, I believe, a position taken by elected officials to work with potential investors for the state of Utah to make it easy for outside dollars to come in and be spent here. And we can see plenty of positive outcomes from that. Watch the signs up and down the freeway, you know, Ogden to Provo. Those logos and brand names you see on new developments up and down the freeway are a reflection in many ways of the kind of incentives that Utah has offered, the kind of the carrot, if you will, for incoming businesses. Once upon a time, that carrot was primarily came in the form of post-performance tax breaks, where come in that those programs are still in place. It used to be overseen by GOED, which is now the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, requiring that those in business investments, those new companies hit employment targets, investment targets, and then get a rebate. This is the structure of these incentives, right, is much different. These are front-loaded deals that are presumptive, I think it's fair to say, about what benefits are going to come down the road. From a incentive program standpoint, that's a markedly different approach, and it's one that any business major would tell you is dangerous.
Art Raymond, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Art Raymond, he's a business reporter for the Deseret News. He covers industry and technology. We'll take another break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from listeners just like you. To donate, visit KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We've been talking about the data center project in Box Elder County, but of course this fight is playing out all over the country. Communities are pushing back against these sprawling AI facilities. Over the last year, efforts to block them or slow them down have just multiplied. But at the same time, the pressure to build more AI infrastructure is only getting more intense. We also spoke this week with Karen Wise. She's a technology correspondent for the New York Times. Just give me a sense of where you think it fits. Is it unique in some way and significant, or just something that you've been seeing play out around the country?
It's honestly something I've been seeing play out around the country. I mean, this is a very large project. Like, there's no doubt about it. It's on the larger side of announcements that I've seen. But the kind of intensity of the response is being repeated kind of all over the place. You know, there are supporters of these projects. I don't want to make it seem like there's not, but over and over and over again, there is this local opposition for a number of reasons: the speed, the size, the opacity, you know, the lack of transparency over certain things that is creating a pretty strong backlash and is actually becoming an issue for the tech companies in some sense, because they need to be able to build too. So there's kind of these interesting dynamics that are happening.
Do you see a pattern developing? I mean, one of the things you reported on is this project in a county in Indiana where there seemed to be at least initially this kind of enthusiasm about it, like this is a great economic opportunity. And then there emerges this public backlash. And I'm wondering if you're seeing something of that kind of a pattern here in the Utah story.
Yeah, you know, I found in Indiana, it seems somewhat similar in Utah, is that they actually, the first large data center in there, which is a very large Amazon one, it kind of didn't cause any hoopla at all. That area had already been through a whole kind of fight over that site when they were creating essentially an industrial zone. Yeah. And so they kind of fought that battle. But then the new ones came along while that one was already under construction. And there's no doubt that the construction is very disruptive in a local area. And so all of a sudden people were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like we gave our one, we did our duty to the US and to whatnot, like let us be. And I think it was the kind of piling on nature that became so startling. And I know, you know, things happen in different parts of the state, but increasingly I'm hearing that people are talking to each other. So while there may have not been a large project in a particular location, you know, there have been other ones in Utah. And broadly, that kind of is a pattern we see is data centers tend, someone once described them as pack animals to me, because they, when they find an area that has available land, available power, government's willing to work with them, they kind of start kind of building one on top of the next there. Yeah. So it makes sense in some sense.
It seems like one of the themes in your work on this is that the projects start out sounding like just another industrial development, and then over time they reveal themselves to be something kind of larger in terms of power and water and land use, like a kind of scale creep. Do you think, is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, most data centers are being built now with the eye to expand even more.
Yeah.
And they're not industrial projects. In some ways, they're kind of bigger and more demanding. In some ways, they're actually much simpler than a large factory or whatnot. So they are kind of different beasts, but they're not necessarily regulated as such. Like the land, I've talked with people about this, kind of land use doesn't totally know where to fit them in yeah. some cases. Some commercial zoning, essentially, it can get by under. Sometimes it's heavy industrial, but it, when they're done, they're not like the demands of a factory in that there's not like you have thousands of workers showing up every day. Right. So you kind of have different needs. They're kind of being wedged into a different type of project.
Meta has a project in Eagle Mountain in Utah that it started like, you know, 2018, I think, and it was this kind of conventional data center campus, you know, and they were drawn for all the reasons, you know, tech companies are interested. They're interested in cheap land and tax incentives and, you know, some power infrastructure, stuff like that. But now the project is starting to expand dramatically along with this AI boom. And it seems like, I guess that's what, as you say about the sort of stacking on, this is the thing that's going on around the country, I suppose.
Yeah, kind of AI requires a different kind of computing. And so particularly if you're building data centers to train or develop new AI models, you need a lot of computing power close by to each other because you're running a lot of calculations at once. And so that's some of the advantage of having kind of these massive campuses is you can harness them essentially as a single computer. And that gives you more computing power for the type of work you do when you build AI. So it does need something different. That also is why they require more power, though, is the type of chips and processors that are used to build AI systems are just more power hungry. So they need more power to run and they need more power to be cooled because they run hotter because they're just doing the simple version of it is they're doing a lot at once.
I wonder, are you seeing then, is this, do they just inevitably grow? Like, because I think one of the things that people are wondering is, can you, and we'll get to this a little bit later, but, you know, the governor is saying, okay, maybe we should, if not scale back, we should ease into this as the community gets used to it or as we make our case. But do they have an inevitability to them in terms of their scale?
Yeah, I think honestly, to some degree, yes. I mean, it doesn't mean you governing bodies, you know, there's very complicated jurisdictions on a lot of these. Sometimes no one really has, if it's unincorporated or already zoned industrial, there are very few levers against them. But the technology inevitably pushes towards scale because you're making investments around things like kind of these large clusters of chips, of processors. You're making investments around the energy infrastructure, the transmission lines, other things like that. So there is a general instinct to try to do that. And you kind of end up with people on the ground that have experience with it. So I've seen some places where there's been little kind of pauses, but including places that have had data centers for a while, just to kind of catch their breath. But broadly, I've not seen kind of like hard walls put up broadly, they tend to continue going so far. We are in very much a new era of all of this because the number of data centers being proposed, the number being built, the speed with which they're being proposed and the speed with which they're getting built is just different than it was even a couple years ago. So people are really kind of trying to catch their breath a bit. And you know, one of the things that inevitably causes discomfort in local communities is there's just not trust around it. When you go this quickly, you know, a lot of companies won't say who their customers are. They'll just, you just know the developer building something. Yep. You know, some places have NDAs or things like that. And it just builds a sense of distrust. And so that's a really hard place to start when you're talking about a project this large.
So when Kevin O'Leary, he's of course the Shark Tank guy who's the main investor in the project being proposed in Box Elder County. Mm-hmm. And lately, when he goes on news programs, I don't know if you've seen this or podcasts to talk about it, he has kind of a costume. Anyway, he wears this baseball cap that says Utah National Security on it. And I wanted to ask sort of the thing that he's getting at, because it seems like, I mean, one of the things you've talked about is how the Trump administration has been supportive of these data center projects mm-hmm. and talking about them as this national security imperative. So when O'Leary wears a cap that says Utah national security, is he leaning into that idea of patriotism, you know, us against the Chinese or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. That is one of the kind of main forces or reasons people talk about wanting to really develop a lot of AI data centers quickly is because, you know, the advancement of AI systems is really dependent on how much computing power you have right now. I mean, this is a very crude way of thinking about it, but it's sort of a bigger is better moment. There are questions over if that will always be true or how that might change. But for now, that's sort of been the case of more data, more computing power, you can get kind of smarter models. And so this kind of race against China in terms of developing the most advanced AI systems is a very prominent reason why a lot of supporters for these projects are pushing them. And certainly in DC, one of the big reasons there's support for it as well.
How do you think about where this is shaking out along the political fault lines? I mean, a lot of attention has been paid, at least around here, to Tucker Carlson's debate, I guess you could put it that way, or his conversation anyway with Kevin O'Leary, where he went after him. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, like, where do the politics shake out? I mean, of course, people assume, okay, the right's going to favor development and a tax base and jobs, that sort of thing, and the left is going to focus on the environmental costs and water use and things like that. But how do you see it breaking down?
Yeah, it's actually not a right-left thing per se right now. And I would say broadly in a number of places, I've seen it be more of a horseshoe. So you have a more populist side of the right oppose it, and then you have a more environmental progressive wing on the left oppose it. And then in the middle, you have, I would say broadly, kind of more pro-business Democrats, more centrist Republicans, labor unions in favor of these. And that's kind of – everything's obviously an oversimplification in some sense, yeah. But that is broadly the dynamics you're seeing. I've talked to people who have said, you know, me and this lady are usually on the opposite sides of things, but on this one, we're in it together. And so there is becoming a pretty potent political force, at least at the local level, on these issues. You know, I'm not sure how or if we will see it bubble up as you kind of step up to state or then national level. But certainly locally, you're seeing these kind of unusual alliances now.
The Gallup released this poll last week that showed, I think it was 7 in 10 Americans say they don't want these data centers in their communities. And I wondered, what is it that they're responding to? Because it seems like it's more than just the pollution or the water use and the traffic, although that's a big part of it. But I wonder if you are also sort of considering these larger questions about people are just confused about what AI is going to mean, you know, for jobs and for society. Like, is it a more abstract concern in some ways too?
Yeah, you definitely hear that come up for some people is sort of like a for what? Like, why is this what, if we're going to take the brunt of this development, what are we getting out of it? Is that something we even want? And so you do see kind of the pro data center side try to really talk up about data centers actually run a lot of the modern economy. I mean, you and I are talking right now over kind of a program that's online run through a data center, you know, hospital medical records, all these different things require this. Yeah. And so they really talk up kind of the utility of this. But I think the fear of AI is also a big play, part of what's playing locally, and people saying, you're asking me to kind of bear the brunt of this, and I don't even know if I want the end result of it. So there's kind of these dueling messaging going on. And I would say one other thing that's separate straight from the environmental concern is some people just don't want them. A lot of people just don't want them. Yeah. You know, the new generation of AI data centers tend to have less water demands in general because they need to use a different cooling system. But that doesn't really placate a lot of people who are concerned about water. I'm not talking about this project specifically. I'm just saying in general what, what I've observed. And so some people say, I moved in a rural area for a reason, and I just don't want this here. Like, I just don't, you know?
Yeah.
And that is I've seen places where you have developers of these projects kind of take a variety of approaches. Some have tried to be much more accommodating, really do a lot of sincere, I would say, community outreach. You've seen some sue local communities and take a much more aggressive tactic. So there's a kind of a range of response. And for some people, there's nothing that will kind of make it feel better, basically.
One of the things that you said on the Daily a few months ago was just how the scale of these things is hard to wrap your head around. And I wonder if you think that's a big part of what's going on, is these things are just getting – these build-outs are growing. They're bigger – massive. They're more powerful. I mean, and I think – I wonder, is that what people are responding to, is just the sheer scale is crazy?
I think it's the scale and the speed of it combined. Yeah. So data centers have been built in this country for quite a long time now, actually. Right. But they're just getting bigger. The campuses are getting a lot bigger. They're requiring more resources, and they are going to places that haven't had them before. So the data center developers now need a lot of available power and a lot of available land. And so they're looking to places that are more rural, that are maybe you know, in the Southeast, for example. No one would have built a data center in Louisiana a couple years ago, even, or a substantial data center, because it wasn't near a major population center. But when you're training AI models, you don't need to be that close to a major population center. So you can go where there's a utility who said, I can build you these things, and there's power and a government that's willing to say, what do you need? We'll make it happen.
So last week, Utah Governor Cox said he thought, in thinking about all of this, that maybe the state should consider at least a step back. And one of the things he admitted in his, he said, okay, the messaging around this data center has gotten away from us. And he said the administration was taking a step back, and this is how he put it, right-sizing this for this time because of the feedback that we got. Now, he didn't say the project is going to be smaller in the long run or that we shouldn't do it. But it seems like he said we should move more gradually, you know, with like approvals that are broken into phases. And I wonder, is this a technique you're seeing from leaders, like, rather than saying just accept the whole thing, let's do this in pieces?
Yeah, you know, that's very interesting to hear. There are places that have done more what I would call like moratoriums, kind of short-term moratoriums, just to like wrap their head around what's happening. I've seen that from utility companies and I've seen it from local officials as well. It's a little bit of people need to kind of like gather new facts. And I've talked to a lot of people that build these projects who say, we don't want to be somewhere we're not wanted. And so if you can kind of bring the community along to a project, there could be long-term benefits to that. So I actually think it's a really interesting approach. And I think what's interesting right now is you're starting to see both people in government and the companies, or some of the companies at least, try to figure out a way to break through this like heated impasse and to be more constructive. And you know, when I talk to folks who oppose data centers, some of them are like, there's nothing that will change their mind. I'm certain of that. But some of them are like, I actually think there's a way that this could go through that I'd be comfortable with, but I just, it's too fast to kind of fully wrap my head around it. I talked to one local official in another state who said, you know, I'm actually okay with these, but what if we just did like a 70% tax break instead of an 80% tax break? Like, let's stop for a second and think about what we want out of this if we're going to give over these resources and this space in our community in some way.
I wanted to ask you something about something you had mentioned, that you've been talking about how one of the things we're seeing is that communities, these local communities, have started to see that they have their own kind of leverage and their own kind of power, and that they're learning they have a kind of control that they may not have realized. Would you say something about that?
Yeah. You know, if you have available power, good parcels of land, you know, that are not too fragmented, you have broadly a government that is interested in these developments, you actually have something very valuable right now. And so I think there are ways that communities can use that to their benefit, to kind of negotiate a little bit harder. And I mean, at least we're starting to see that. There was an interesting report out of, I want to say it was Brookings, that looked at different things that communities should try to ask for. Like, okay, if this is the AI economy, can we get some of that computing power for our local college? Can we, you know, not little token gestures, but actually like meaningful? Can we participate in the future that we are being part of? And so there's also, I've just seen kind of reconsideration of the taxation schemes and the tax breaks. In general, the most powerful tax breaks in these is sales tax abatement, because they have to replace the chips inside these data centers every couple of years. And so each time they're very expensive, and each time the sales tax breaks adds up a lot over time. So I've seen people say, maybe we should lower, you know, give a tax break. We get that that's part of playing in this game, but maybe a little bit less, or maybe we should ask for more upfront, more commitments and things like that.
Let me ask you finally, it seems like what we're seeing are these two forces that are colliding. On one hand, you have this growing surge of public opposition, community opposition to all of this. But then there's the other force, which is that there's at least the, you know, tech companies and state leaders and people are saying, look, there's not enough data centers for the demand that people have. So this is inevitable. This has to happen. Given the so how do you, what do you make of that? The question of whether or not this is just sort of delaying the inevitable, and how you manage the collision of those forces.
Yeah, you know, the tech companies right now don't have enough computing capacity. They say it every quarter on their earnings calls. We could have sold more services if we had more data centers open, and they talk about monetizing them the first day they open. So basically, as soon as these are commissioned, each individual building, they can get them up and running and serving customer data. So there is this mismatch, and there is kind of these broad forces that are interested in it. I would say also, you know, they are in the construction phase, very large employers, and they can bring a very big economic boost to a region. And that's been important for the US economy. I mean, there's been research that showed that. So they can be disruptive in that phase, but they can, I mean, I've talked to electricians that make unbelievable amounts of money. You know, there are strains, like, you know, housing costs can go up in local economies, but also like people are eating at the pizza shop after the day and whatnot. So in terms of the inevitability, I mean, I do think broadly there will be a lot more data centers built in this country, and probably in more or less every state to some degree. And I just think the issue is, how do communities navigate that? And it's not that they don't have power to shut them down. There are some places that absolutely will not have them. Like, right, there's just the political will or the legal mechanisms to make that the case. But there are some places where there's either not the political leverage, and there's some places where there's just a lot of mixed politics behind it, basically. I think there are elected leaders who genuinely think these are transformational economic development projects for their region. You get a lot of construction jobs on the data centers themselves, obviously building a lot more electricity and utility infrastructure. I mean, there's a lot of work that is all tied up in that. So I'm going to be watching, really, like, how do communities and the companies themselves adapt to these tensions? And what sort of additional give or takes do you have? And you're going to have some that are going to be quite adversarial, and you're going to have some that are going to be more collaborative. you know, Microsoft, for example, just said that they were going to get rid of all NDAs, all non-disclosure agreements, because they, I think, rightly identified that secrecy was kind of an enemy of building trust.
Yeah.
And so I'll be curious if that helps. Like, that they need these projects to go up. And so getting rid of NDAs helps build goodwill and some trust and kind of smooth out a process, at least somewhat. That could be in their best financial interest. So I understand these changes. It's interesting to watch the different approaches between the big tech companies and also the independent developers that are often partnering with them.
Karen Wise, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
It's Karen Wise. She's a technology correspondent for the New York Times. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Instagram at Radio West. We're on YouTube at KUER90.1. You can email us at radiowest@KUER.org. Our intern is Aidan Oneida, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. I'm Doug Fabrizio.